I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead this evening, some New Jersey towns are offering breaks on property taxes just for buying pizza and hoagies. First, moments ago, a judge rejected Bill Cosby's bid to stop efforts to keep a sexual assault case against him from proceeding to trial. For 2 days of sometimes dramatic testimony, prosecutors and Cosby's attorneys have argued about whether he got a binding promise a decade ago that he would never face criminal charges in the case. WHYY's Laura Benchoff is on hand at the Montgomery Courthouse and joins me now live with details. Good evening, Laura.
Hi, Dave.
Laura, the case involved the allegation that Cosby drugged and sexually assaulted a woman in his mansion back in 2004. Remind us, why is he just being charged now?
Well, a couple of reasons. First, back in 2004 or 2005, when the woman actually reported the case, the DA at the time, his name was Bruce Castor, declined to press charges. He said he didn't feel like there was enough evidence and that it wouldn't actually hold up in a criminal court. A lot had happened between now and then. Many more women have come forward with similar stories. And also a deposition from a civil case in which Cosby admitted to buying drugs before he had sex and giving them to women whom he intended to have sex with, that all became public. And so people started reexamining this case, and they found out that there was actually still time to prosecute this case, even though the alleged incident happened over 10 years ago.
And with that, on what grounds did Cosby's attorneys now obviously unsuccessfully argue that the case couldn't proceed?
You know, their argument was simple. They said that their client had been assured, both verbally and in the form of a kind of densely worded press release, that he could never be criminally prosecuted, and that promise, because it was extended by a then district attorney, was binding, and that should be that should hold basically forever, was what they said.
Now, today, the attorney for the alleged victim, Andrea Constand, did take the stand. Why was she called, and what did she have to say?
So she took the stand for the now district attorney for the prosecutors, and she essentially testified that she'd never heard of any such agreement. If she had heard of one, you know, she more or less speculated she wouldn't have gone, would not have supported it, that it didn't do anything for her victim, for her client, and that's generally how these agreements work. So she was there to sort of corroborate the prosecutor's stance that this agreement was just not documented enough, that it wasn't enough there for it to keep this current criminal case from going forward.
And indeed, with the judge just now rejecting Cosby's bid to stop efforts to keep that sexual assault case from proceeding, is there any sense yet of the timetable on how this will roll out next?
Well, we know a few things. We know that the judge did not have to deliberate long before he made that decision. And he also announced that he wanted to keep going tonight and hear about another motion that Cosby's lawyers have introduced. They've also asked that the current district attorney who is prosecuting the case be disqualified. So the next step is we're now going to hear arguments on that. But frankly, this is very unusual. A lot of these things are being debated before there's even been what's called a preliminary hearing, which is usually sort of the opening of a criminal trial. So it's hard to say exactly how long these challenges could go on before and if there is actually going to be a criminal trial and what will be allowed to be argued in it.
WHYY's Laura Benchoff reporting from the Montgomery County Courthouse. In other news today, New Jersey homeowners pay the highest property tax bills in the nation. But recently, some towns have been taking a new approach to cutting their residents' property taxes. And according to WHYY's Joe Hernandez, it seems to be working.
4 years ago, the town of Marlboro began issuing residents cards that could be swiped at certain local businesses. But these weren't your typical cards.
Every time you shop in our town, present your property tax card. And just like loyalty reward points, you earn property tax credits on every sale. You can then track your...
Here's how it works. You buy an Italian hoagie, a bag of salt and vinegar chips, and a soda for $10. You pay the $10 up front, swipe your card, and the deli owner gives you a break. But unlike with other loyalty cards, instead of giving you a discount or even every 10th hoagie free, the deli owner takes your 10 and sends 50 cents to the town, which then subtracts it from your property tax bill. Carmine DeFalco is the CEO of FinCredit, which runs the property tax card program.
What is the most important thing to give back to a homeowner? It is not points or miles or even cash back, but property tax credits. Everybody can relate to that.
DeFalco says since 2012, Marlboro residents have saved $200,000 in property taxes using their cards. Since then, more than a dozen towns across New Jersey have jumped in. Michael Mignona, the mayor of Voorhees, says it's an easy way for residents to pay less on tax day.
If you're going to buy gas or if you're going to go buy groceries, which mostly all of us do, it makes sense to go to a participating gas station or supermarket because you're going to get tax credits against your purchase.
And that is the other benefit to this program, more money for local businesses. Filippo Sparacio, who owns a pizzeria in Glassboro, says the program has driven more people to buy a slice at his shop. He says about 75% of his customers use the card.
It attracts more customers in. They basically enjoy it because they come spend money here and then they end up getting money back at the end. And it keeps his customers satisfied.
Businesses can choose how much of a discount they want to offer. What they get is free advertising through town websites that explain the program to residents and say where it's available. Glassboro Councilman Hector Cabezas, who regularly uses his property tax card, says the program really does help people spend their money closer to home.
I stop by at one of the bagel stores in town just about every morning, pick up a bagel, cup of coffee, and they're participating in the program. So I save taxes every time I support one of my local merchants.
Renters, fear not. If you aren't a homeowner but still live in town and use the card, most municipalities will simply cut you a check at the end of the year. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
An experimental approach to the way doctors and insurers care for patients is expanding in the Philadelphia region. WHYY's Alana Gordon reports that the private insurer Aetna has joined the effort.
Healthcare is traditionally delivered through something called fee-for-service. A patient sees a doctor, gets a test, the doctor bills for it. But in a newer model, doctors work within an umbrella organization that helps coordinate the care of patients. The idea is to help steer patients through what can be a very disjointed health system and financially incentivize doctors to keep patients healthy. The largest effort in Philadelphia is the Delaware Valley Accountable Care Organization. Dr. Catherine Snyder is the CEO and gives an example of how it works.
We've intervened actually within the emergency room with a patient who would have ended up getting admitted, but we knew they were there real time, and the primary care physician was able to help coordinate with the skilled nursing facility where they had come from and really avoid that admission.
And in turn, she says, prevent higher cost care and complications. Snyder's group, which is owned by several area hospitals, already oversees care for about 100,000 people who have Medicare. About 700 primary care doctors are part of it. Now, Aetna has signed on, adding about 70,000 more patients to the fold.
Well, it's a really important move for us because, of course, we're trying to create some critical mass to change the care model.
This kind of approach is being tested out across the country. Robert Field with Drexel School of Public Health says the approach is promising, but it's too soon to know how well it's actually working.
Part of the hard part is the most challenging patients are the ones with chronic conditions. And those are the conditions that develop over years or decades. So it's going to take years or decades to see whether these new arrangements help them or not.
The Delaware Valley expansion takes effect in April. I'm Alana Gordon, WHYY News.
Taking a look at this evening's headlines, Philadelphia and Bucks counties are the latest to add a $5 local fee to all Pennsylvania auto registrations starting April 1st. Philadelphia expects the fees to generate up to $3.5 million a year for the streets department's operational costs. Bucks will spend its $2.9 million on a bridge repair program. A requirement that Pennsylvania students pass the Keystone exams to graduate high school is on hold for at least 2 years, although Governor Tom Wolf says that doesn't mean he's against testing or accountability. Wolf signed a bill today putting the test graduation requirements on ice until the 2018-2019 academic year. The legislation passed the General Assembly unanimously, and Wolf says more time is needed to fix implementation issues and to find the best way to measure student achievement. He says the testing system is at best incomplete and puts undue burdens on faculty. Showers well into this evening and then gradual clearing overnight, low 48 degrees. Tomorrow, anticipate intervals of sun and clouds, high 51 degrees, Plenty of sunshine Friday, high around 43. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY-FM. Thanks for being a YStream supporter of WHYY. I'm Dave Heller. Let's take a music break with the Baiman Brothers. This is Shelter Island. The Baiman Brothers with Shelter Island. They're not actually brothers, and none of the members are named Baiman. The trio consists of David Nickturn on guitars, C.J. Vanston on keyboards, and Christopher Guest on mandolin and guitar. Yep, that Christopher Guest of Saturday Night Live and Spinal Tap fame. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on Pledge Free Y-Stream.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. At his gold medal competition win, the audience stood, cheered, and wept. Violinist Augustine Hodelisch has been hailed as a courageous, powerful virtuoso. And now he joins the Philadelphia Orchestra for Brahms' Violin Concerto. Tickets at philorc.org or at 215-893-1999 this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the Kimmel Center. Hodelisch plays Brahms with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Frederick Living supports WHYY. Frederick Living, a continuing care retirement community nestled in the beautiful countryside of Montgomery County, is proud to announce the expansion of their campus. The meadows at Frederick Living will consist of 55 cottages clustered in an innovative design based on the pocket neighborhood concept. Frederick Living is now taking reservations. Details about scheduling a visit at 610-754-7878. That's 610-754-7878. Frederick Living. Live well.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. The opera, based on the 1997 novel Cold Mountain, premieres in Philadelphia this weekend, and at the same time, the Philadelphia Free Library launches its annual One Book, One Philadelphia citywide reading selection, which is Cold Mountain. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports that it's not a coincidence.
It's a National Book Award-winning novel, an Academy Award-winning film, and now it's an opera. Despite all these variations, author Charles Frazier is reluctant to give up control of his story.
And I think that's what my role is in that, is sort of the gatekeeper.
He opened that gate when he got a call from composer Jennifer Higdon in 2010. That's just weeks after she won a Pulitzer Prize. Frazier found her to be a true artist, so he gave her carte blanche to do whatever she wished.
I mean, I cannot imagine somebody who doesn't really know about writing a novel looking over my shoulder saying, hey, I've got 10 great ideas that you really need to incorporate into this thing.
Which is a kind of an amazing piece of permission to get from an author.
That is Jennifer Higdon.
Because it's really letting go of the story and the characters and hoping that someone will take care of them. And I promised him I would take care of his characters.
The main characters are Ada, a young woman holding down a farm in Cold Mountain, North Carolina during the Civil War, Inman, a deserting Confederate soldier trying to get back to her, and Ruby, a farmhand trying to prove she's tough enough to do the job. Higdon says she and her librettist, Jean Shear, had to whittle the 450-page book down to something that could be staged.
Jean Shear and I sat down at a Starbucks at the corner of 10th and Chestnut 4 or 5 years ago, figuring out, all right, we need key scenes that advance the story of Ada, Inman, and Ruby. Because all three of these characters have a transformation.
Higdon wanted to weave bluegrass influences into the opera without actually quoting anything directly. She also wanted as many chorus numbers as possible.
It's like making a quilt. You figure out what panels need to go where, and you figure out how to sew it together. And it has to sound logical, like it's unfolding naturally. So it's a very serious balancing act, but when it works, it's heaven.
The bones of the story of Cold Mountain is the tale of Odysseus, a war-weary soldier struggling to journey home as his beloved struggles to keep that home intact. Frazier says, at its heart, Cold Mountain is the oldest story around.
I read a lot of the Greeks. You know, they knew how to just cut right to the bone. And, you know, we think of things progressing over time, but go back and read the Greeks and things don't get better.
Frazier says that's why his novel can survive translation into film and opera and into 35 different languages and counting. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Nearly everyone's had a job where they had to sometimes swallow their pride and say, I'm sorry. Restaurant server Otis Gray notes that in his position, it's almost a daily occurrence. On this episode of Story Corner, the Philadelphia resident tells the tale of one particularly egregious encounter.
I love being a server. I truly enjoy giving people a great dining experience. You can make a ton of money as a server, but there's a catch. Every dollar you make comes from tips, so you gotta be knowledgeable. You gotta be efficient, and above all else, when shit hits the fan, and it always does, you have to apologize. Which is hard because when you're a server, you lose all faith in humanity. People are just so rude. One really busy night, a dude paid for his $27 bill in change. One woman refused to pay her bill because after eating her entire meal, she complained that the room was too hot. And during these moments, all you can do is just smile and nod because if you don't, you're not getting paid and you're probably going to lose your job. So in my senior year of college, I got this excellent serving job at this high-end Italian place, and I was walking out every night with a bunch of money. And they even had this perk where if your table got a bottle of wine and they didn't finish it, you as a server could cork it and take it home at the end of the night. So I'm working at the restaurant, and one night I'm super in the weeds. In the weeds means that you are so busy that there is no possible way you're going to make all your tables happy. And you're just running around, and you're trying to say sorry and apologize, but there's no way you can keep up. And I see this woman walk in, and she gets seated at my table. And she's with these two just super stylish gay dudes, and she barely makes it to the table. She is trashed. So I go over to the table, and I say, "Hi, my name's Otis. I'll be your server tonight." And this woman just points to me. She says, "I want to order." And she points to the menu. She says, "I want this Pinot Grigio, but I don't want to taste any peaches." I'm like, "Okay, ma'am. This particular Pinot Grigio does have notes of peaches in it, as it says on the menu. I want this Pinot Grigio, but I better not taste any peaches." So I put it in, and the wine gets to her table. And I'm going to my other table, and she grabs me again. And she sticks the glass of wine up into my face, spills it on my uniform, and she says, "Smell this. What do you smell?" "Peaches. Peaches, that's right. I said no peaches." And the guys are just laughing, and I know this woman is not going to tip me. And I know that I should apologize and walk away, but I had it, and I decided I am going to sell this woman the most expensive bottle of wine on the menu, because I know these two dudes are not drinking. I know if she has another sip, she's going to have to get her stomach pumped. And this is like a $175 bottle of wine. It was called the Bodega Nemia Malbec from Argentina. I said, "Ma'am, if you don't like this Pinot Grigio, I think I have something you're really going to like." And I put on this performance. I told her it was minty and spicy and had these notes of chocolate. The soil in the Rio Negro Valley is exquisite. And she is just entranced. She said, "Yeah, could you bring that? Thank you." So I brought the wine. She had a few sips and passed out on the table. Her gentleman paid her check and took her out of the restaurant. So I left that night at about 2:30 a.m. and I barely made any tips. But I did walk the beautiful streets of Providence, Rhode Island, sipping the Bodega Nemia Malbec straight from the bottle. Sorry, not sorry.
That's Otis Gray, artist, writer, and cook living in South Philadelphia, recorded at a first-person arts story slam on the theme, Sorry. Sorry, but that's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas, with help all day today from the intrepid Brett Rader. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.